Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Sublimely Gothic, the podcast devoted only to the most sordid and macabre tales ever penned to paper. Here you shall explore the darkest jewels of literature with gothic enthusiasts Amy and Jess. Enter this realm at your own risk, for the night is dark and full of terrors. Welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Amy.
And I'm Jess.
And today we're going to talk about the recent release of Mexican Gothic by Silvia Moreno-Garcia. As with all episodes, there will be spoilers. We will be going into spoiling the plot and the big plot twist, so proceed at your own risk.
Yes, definitely. Especially with this one coming out. Did it come out in 2020?
Yes, it came out in June. Like, you got the book of the month.
Yeah.
So you got it first.
Right. Gosh, we've read so many books this year. I'm like, when did I read that? I'll have to look at the back cover real quick. Yes, I did. I remember reading this for a number of reasons.
Yes. So overall, like, I don't know. Sometimes I feel justified in my rating of it. Like, I give it a 3.5.
3.5 out of 5?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just as general book. And I feel like maybe I'm being a little unfair because the same month I read Mexican Gothic was the same month that I read a bunch of literary masterpieces like The Little Stranger by Sarah Waters and The Ghostwriter by John Harwood and Home Before Dark by Riley Sager. And so I just read all these like really, really good Gothic ones. And then I read this and then the plot twist, I was just like, what?
The plot twist, I think, you know, when I read it, so it was my July book of the month. And I think we had read so many like good, substantive, not to say that this isn't, Gothic novels that kind of, you know, I think a question I asked myself is, am I just expecting this to go a certain way because of the books that I've read? And that's why the twist was so jarring to me. Or is it just so, it's pretty out there for a Gothic book.
It's pretty trippy.
It's, yeah. Yeah.
Literally very trippy.
Yeah. And legal now in some places, which that's cool. But there was a little bit of, you know what? I think the horror element in this, it wasn't, I have a note here that says, like, I could have dealt without the cannibalism. So I'm not, that is just something that I would prefer not to read.
So. Yeah. But anyway, before we delve further, shall we do our 60-second recap?
Let's do it.
Okay. Here, let me get my little alarm. Okay. 3, 2, 1, go. So we have this Mexican socialite in the 50s, and she goes to visit her cousin because her father, the cousin's uncle, is very concerned about, she hasn't heard that much from the cousin, and things have gotten pretty quiet and weird. So they go to the old manor house where the silver mine used to be to like the in-laws, and creepy shit happens and she has really crazy psychedelic dreams, and how are they real, how are they not? And then turns out all the family is connected to a mutant mushroom and fungi, and that's what causes all the scary stuff to happen. And so she eventually escapes, and then, you know, the fungus is destroyed maybe, and the house burns to the ground in a very Gothic-like fashion, which I did like.
Yes.
And yeah, 10 seconds to spare.
Okay. Well, you honestly, you're gonna do a better job than I have, because I'm like, I read this in July, so I just saw a joke. It's like it was a book of the month post on social media that was like, oh, I love this book, I'll cherish it forever. And then like 2 months later, it's like, did I read that? I know I read it, but my summary is not going to be as good. So I will count myself in. Okay. So we meet Naomi, who is a, as Amy said, 1950s socialite. She is tasked with going to visit her cousin. I believe her name is Catalina, in a kind of creepy Gothic house, which is very European, but brought over to Mexico. And some weird things start happening, and Naomi has some troubles, Naomi is the protagonist. Sorry. Naomi, Catalina has some troubles. She meets, Catalina's husband, who is kind of a dick. Her the father-in-law of Catalina is a very racist man and is critical of Naomi and her skin color. We'll talk about that. There is trippy wallpaper. There are mushrooms. The house burns down at the end. I don't, and that's the best I can do with like 3 seconds left.
Yeah.
There's my timer.
Okay. Well, let's talk about what I did like about the book. I really like Naomi.
Me too. That is a note I had as well. A gothic heroine that had some stuff to her.
Well, what I really liked about her, because I'm on this, I've been on it for a while, this feminist trip of, you know, kind of the sort of commentary and backlash against like the tomboy, like I personally call it like the Arya Stark syndrome, like, and just acknowledging that, yes, it's good for women who don't want to fit into standard femininity. It's good that they have those role models. But more often than not, a lot of women don't fall into that completely, I reject all femininity, I reject all social convention. So I really like Naomi because she is a socialite. You know, she likes to party, she likes fashion, she likes pretty frilly dresses, but she also likes to study. And like the whole deal with her father is like, okay, if you go to your check on your cousin, then I will let you go to university. And so she has her own goals, but she also has interests that would otherwise be perceived as frivolous.
Yeah, I agree. I think that you make a good point. And we've talked, I think we've talked about Arya Stark, and we've talked about one of my favorite authors, Gillian Flynn, who wrote Gone Girl and talks about
Gone Girl, I remember.
Yeah, the cool girl, you know, the girl that can look like a model, but then like drink beer and watch sports and, you know, kind of be one of the guys.
Be a car mechanic and all this crap.
Right, right. Which then, you know, and she's talking about that not as a as positive thing. I think also Manic Pixie Dream Girl. There are all these kind of little, you know, I just got off of work as usual in silos is a business term that keeps being used, but we're kind of pegged into these ideas of what a woman should be and only that. So I appreciated Naomi's kind of flair for the dramatic with her dress. I mean, I just also want to say, we talk about book covers every now and then. This book cover is absolutely stunning.
It is.
So I love the contrast of her dress and the wallpaper. Beautiful book cover, great character. Naomi made it. I like Naomi. I would want to meet Naomi. She's smart she's gorgeous.
It was really, really great. And here's basically one quote that sums up all those sentiments about Naomi's personality. Naomi's father said she cared too much about her looks and parties to take school seriously, as if a woman could not do two things at once.
Fantastic. I love that.
Yeah. So that quote's from page, bottom of page 42, and it just encapsulates. I'm just really paying attention to how, like, we have these archetypes. And in a way, those archetypes are good in a way, but there's a difference between an archetype and a stereotype. And just like, right. You know, I think this may come up in our Harry Potter podcast when we get to Hermione, because I think Hermione does have some of those elements where she is friends with boys and therefore she's kind of a cool girl, and they kind of dismissed like the other girls in her year as sort of like bimbos and frivolous. So yeah, for all those reasons, I really appreciate Naomi.
Yeah. Great character. I'm glad she was a gothic heroine, or added to the, all the gothic heroines out there. Naomi's a good one.
So yeah, Naomi is tasked with checking in on her cousin Catalina, who has married into this basically expat British family who used to have a silver mine. And so she goes to their estate called High Place. And first of all, very unoriginal name. I really did not like that.
High Place, yeah. That just made me laugh for a number of reasons, especially when we're talking about, you know, the twist here later.
Yeah, I'm used to like authors like Lisa Desselm when we had her here, Wolf Spire Hall. I mean, come on.
Right, right, right. Yeah. There's a joke I could think about related to Avatar and in James Cameron's movie, the material that they were seeking was called unobtainium.
Uh-huh.
So High Place. So other than it being kind of like a to me, a slightly funny joke. Is it just because it's so stereotypical that you don't like it? To me, it just kind of sounded very British and other than, you know, the mushroom element.
Like, well, we can think about that maybe for as simple as it is playing into the theme of eugenics and racism that we're better than everyone. We're high up on this mountain. We're above all of you.
Okay. Well, that's an interesting.
I thought of that on the fly, and that is possible, but still, that's not a good enough reason.
No, I mean, there's a bunch of reasons that we could have named it, like, I don't know, I'm trying to find the word for a different word for mushrooms. I don't know. It
Toadstool Hall.
There we go. Toadstool Hall. Morel Manor. I don't know.
Yeah. So anyway, and then another thing I thought about, it's interesting. So she goes to, again, check in on her cousin who is basically married into this expat British family. And so in that way, because she goes, and it's a very typical, like, gothic, and it's literally transplanting the British gothic manner and literally putting it in Mexico. That's literally what she did. So in a way, I'm not so much upset about that, but in a way, I felt like it was very conflicting and the book should not be named Mexican Gothic if she was going to stay so true to, like, the old school British, like, just moving that into this isolated part of Mexico.
I understand. Well, and you want to talk about bringing the traditional Gothic place of residence to Mexico. If I remember correctly, they literally brought the dirt from
Europe. Yes, they literally brought the soil.
Right. Or from, I don't remember where it was. It wasn't from the UK, was it? Or I don't remember.
I think it was.
Okay. So they literally brought the dirt over there. And I thought, like, I notated that because I'm like, that's pretty extreme, you know, but I guess it makes sense in the context of maybe the specific soil was needed for the mushrooms. I don't know.
Yeah. So anyway, so yeah, I felt conflicted about that because I feel like I was very misled by Mexican Gothic being like clickbait. Because I was thinking more that, okay, we're going to get a real Mexican sort of like townhouse and that's haunted. Like, I thought we were going to get much more of Mexican culture in that way and like getting a few subversions rather than just, again, bringing the English stuff over, soil and all.
I agree with you. Now that you say that, when I picked it up and there was a lot of talk about this book, I was more expecting kind of a Gothic story in the context of Mexican culture rather than Mexican people in a Gothic home.
Yes, which again, both have their own merits. And so I feel like if it was just named something differently, I wouldn't like ding that as a point against it. But I felt like for the title and the way she went, I was just like, meh.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, yeah.
Yeah. So, yes, she goes, so Catalina, not doing too great. She's very tired. And like Florence is like policing her like medical care. Oh my God. I hate Florence so much.
I wrote she was a, what did I say? Florence, Mistress of High Place, a scarier version of Rebecca's Mrs. Danvers.
Oh, Mrs. Danvers? Oh, I did. Yes. I think of Mrs. Danvers too.
Yeah, it was seems to be modeled on, but like a much more horrible. Yeah, no, no thanks. I feel like maybe I could kind of be okay with Miss Danvers, but Florence, no.
I felt like she was just, again, a cardboard caricature of what's seen in Gothic literature. And I felt like we didn't get enough of like her specific motivation for why she is so obsessed with maintaining this this hierarchy with the, you know, patriarch Howard and his crazy fungi growing on him. Like, what does she get out of this deal?
Right.
Yeah. So in I would have been okay with Florence being so severe, but I felt like she was made that way just to be like an artificial obstacle to Naomi instead of like getting to the real core of why is she this way.
Did you feel she was a little bit, it was a little bit much with Florence?
For that level, she needed more explanation and more motivation. If if there was the motivation and explanation to pair it with, then I would have been okay with it being that extreme. But since there were, then I wish it would have been toned down a little.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see that.
Yeah, but basically, who the hell is in this crazy high place house? There is Catalina, who is Naomi's cousin, but the whole family, what are they, the Doyles?
Yeah, which I thought was maybe a little hat tip to Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, possibly.
Oh, this is true. Maybe. I haven't read any of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. I need to at some point. But anyway, so we have the patriarch, who is Howard. And then there's his son, Virgil. And then there is Virgil's cousin and Howard's nephew, Francis. And then Florence is... Oh, is it? Okay, Francis is Virgil's nephew, and Florence is Francis's mother. So we've got Howard the patriarch, his son Virgil, and then the niece and the niece's son.
Okay. I wrote Francis Mushroom Man because he was like super psyched about mushrooms, and kind of,
which I do appreciate that foreshadowing.
You know, and I just thought, like, when I was reading it, not knowing a thing about it, because I didn't, that's why the twist was so shocking. I was like, what an interesting, like, quirk to give a character. You don't often read about people, at least I have not often read about people, like, freaking out about mushrooms. And I thought that was kind of cool, like, in a gothic story. Just, I could have had that be just his weird, like, quirk. And been like, that was interesting. Not sure, you know, what.
And I like it that they gave him his own, like, interest, but it's in a way it's intellectual enough where he and Naomi can, like, bond through their, you know, love of, you know, academia, even though it's not the exact same thing.
Right. Can we talk about Virgil? Because
Virgil, sure. Yeah. Virgil is, I don't know. He's all over the place.
He was, you know, with the notes that I had here related to him, other than he was just a dick and I couldn't stand him. I mean, like, I thought it was interesting to have, I feel like we have a lot of gothic heroes that are not great people, but I don't feel like I've read one on this level. I mean, he's no Mr. Rochester. He's a bad person. And pretty blatantly bad in this. I don't know. You read enough, you watch enough shows, whatever. It takes a lot to elicit some kind of hatred toward a character for me anymore. And I hated him with a very strong passion.
Really? Yeah. At first I really didn't know what to think. And again, because he was deliberately, you know, duplicitous, like kind of going back and forth, but now that once you know, like, his whole role, he's evil, but at the same time he was trying to undermine his father, not because he wanted to save everyone, but he wanted to be able to be the patriarch and control the mushroom and the fungus and be able to do everything for himself.
Yeah, I think his interactions with Naomi were the things that were very sleazy. I mean,
yeah, very sleazy. And in a way, that sleaziness is an extension of his father, Howard's eugenics ideals.
I was,
so shall we discuss that?
Yeah, let's do that, because that's something you messaged me about when you were reading this. And yeah, they're definitely a theme in this story.
So at first I was kind of like, you know, in the context of the mutant mushrooms and, like, you know, people mixing in, like, it now makes sense why they have this fascination with eugenics. Like, because in the beginning, before I knew the spoilers, I thought this was, like, just an extension of, like, the themes of, you know, the vestiges and aftermath of colonialism.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, so just the idea of, you know, some races are better than others. Although, in a way, it also didn't matter. Like, you know, Florence says something like, oh, like, your kind is, like, stockier, like, we need, like, fresh blood or whatever, but she says it with disdain. So even though they believe in eugenics in a way and think that Naomi's bloodline and Catalina's bloodline has some merit that is worthy of mixing with the creepy mushroom bloodline pedigree, whatever the fuck.
Yeah,
I can't wrap my head around this.
I know.
Like, but even with them admitting that, they're still so dismissive of her. And so even in the eugenics parameters, there's a difference between like pure physicality of biology and like the intellectual traits. So it's in a way they see, even though they're trying to quote unquote compliment her as like, oh, you and Catalina are from a very interesting like bloodline, that this will work for us. But it's purely in a like almost as if like cattle, not like people.
It's pretty gross. And I mean, there's no, it's never justified. You know, there's never like the, not that it should be, or, but some characters will make some sort of rationalization for that. And I don't know. I'm glad that Naomi, you know, refused to endure some of those conversations at dinner and kind of stood up for herself. It was just, I don't know what else to say, but other than, you know, the conversation at dinner related to that was, it was silence unless it was racist, it seemed to be.
Yeah. And, you know, satanic mushrooms aside, like just thinking about these themes, it really made me think of some of my Hispanic friends who have talked to me about, you know, how this sort of, what is the term, colorism? You know, just the idea that, you know, there is, I wouldn't say rivalry or like, you know, there is some sort of, you know, tension between within a certain racial community, depending on how dark you are and how light you are.
Yeah, that's something I've talked to. One of my friends has talked about skin lightening creams.
Oh yeah, that's a huge thing in like Indonesia and stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, the idea that, you know, oh, if you are in the Hispanic context, oh, you're a lighter tone, which means you have more colonial blood than indigenous people blood, and that's better, and that, you know, sort of stereotyping still persists to this day, and not just in the Hispanic community, but I was also watching a Netflix series with Octavia Spencer about the first black millionaire, like female millionaire.
Okay.
Like, and she got rich, like, you know, in the early 20th century by creating a hair cream specifically for African American girls' hair.
Oh yeah, I've seen
that. And definitely in that they go into this notion of like the big rival. Business rival she had was, again, was a half black, half white girl. And basically one of her nemesis marketing strategies was that we sell this with them thinking they buy it, hoping that they'll look like me, but knowing they never can, meaning that no matter what they do with their hair, they will always have darker skin than I do.
Yeah.
So it just brought that whole, like, you know, that realm of, it's not like race, ethnicity, and again, just like the pure color of your skin. And what does that imply?
The documentary I was thinking about when you mentioned the Octavia Spencer one was one Chris Rock did several years ago called Good Hair. And it was specifically about African-American women and hairstyle and things like that. I know there's something, I believe it's a bill going around in certain places, which is kind of a dumb way to state that, but called the Crown Act, which is trying to create legislation or overturn legislation that says an employer can discriminate against a black woman because of her hairstyle, or I think it's require, you know, a specific hairstyle. It's called the Crown Act. And it's just, it's unfortunate that that's a thing that still has to be, you know,
discussed.
Right. Yeah. Because it's hair. So, and it's skin color. And unfortunately the Doyles, that's what their name was. I'm like, I was looking at Danvers were quite obsessed with, eugenics and things like that, which I don't know. Interesting to put that in a Gothic novel and, have that conversation. It's an unfortunate conversation that, things like that are still being perpetuated by some people.
Yeah. And so, yeah. So in so many ways, I was loving the whole rising action of how Naomi was going about, you know, figuring things out. And, you know, again, the notions, not condoning these ideologies, but liking that these topics were being brought up in such a way, you know, yada, yada, yada. And then, yeah. And then the mutant mushrooms.
You know, yes, the it had the eugenics, which I anticipated, played a part in you know, what I wrote down is I really thought what was going, the weird goings on were going to be related to previous workers, you know, workers that had passed on because they did not treat these workers well. So, and then it was mushrooms. And I was like, wait. No. That's not what I wanted to see.
Yeah. Like when they said there's epidemic and all the workers die. And I'm just like, okay, that's a point of interest.
Right. So I guess a point of conversation related to ethnicity and would be, I don't really know much about the Mexican Revolution. And this would have... Okay. Well, I know it was kind of touched on, but I didn't really go into depth. And I was trying to think about this in the context of that. I think the Mexican Revolution happened between 1910 and 1920, but beyond that, I'm not a Mexican historian by any means.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and basically what kind of, in my opinion, has fueled the Doyle's racism and notion of eugenics is not just the physicality of, like, the mushroom crap, but also just how much their business suffered because of the revolution, because, it again, like, they were an expat British family who, you know, made money with the exploitation of indigenous, you know, local people. And now their revolution happens. And so now those people are actually in charge.
Right. I'm sorry. I'm thinking back through the novel. Yeah, that's, oh. I think it, we're all provide. We're, I think we keep providing evidence to as to why it was very, in my opinion, leading us to believe that the supernatural things were going to be something that they weren't.
Like, honestly, when I texted you, I for sure, this is going to be a Jane Eyre. Someone's alive that shouldn't be alive.
Mm-hmm.
Is it Agnes? Is it Alice? Like, who is there?
Right. And I guess that's kind of a compliment to the author, too, because it just kept building all these things that it wasn't, you know? And then if you look back, it's like the evidence, I'm not going to reread this anytime soon, but, you know, the evidence probably of the mushrooms were there. Yeah, I don't know.
Like, I think what I would have liked is if it went in the direction in the more traditional, someone is alive that shouldn't be, but also you could have the mushrooms purely as the explanation for all the crazy dreams, that there is this very toxic mushroom that does give you hallucinations and stuff, and that could have explained one part, but not that the whole, like, the, you know, Howard has become this mutant fungus man.
Yeah, that would have been... I think I would have enjoyed that a little bit more if it was an element of the story, but not the big bad, for lack of a better term.
Yeah. Or in a way, again, here's my big thing, is I would have been okay with the mushrooms being the big bad if she had gone more in depth with it. Like, you know, and because we have Frances, the character who is so fascinated by mushrooms, in that context, I would have wanted it to go in a more science fiction where I expect a little bit more this idea to be fleshed out a hell of a lot more. But I felt like she was trying to keep it in the sort of like abstract ghostly thing. And I'm like, no, this is a mushroom. It's doing crazy shit, but it's a tangible thing and it should be, you know, explained kind of more properly.
Right. I understand what you mean. Took a turn for the sci-fi when I was expecting a gothic story, Mexican gothic.
And again, I would be okay with gothic sci-fi if it was properly explained, but I felt like she was trying to shove all the ghost stuff onto mushrooms, and I'm like, no, mushrooms are mushrooms.
Right. Yeah, I think maybe that's why I'm a little bit, like, hesitant to say too much or just can't really gather my thoughts, because that really, the pace of the novel, that really kind of messed with it for me. Like, to say that I stopped and said, like, what the fuck is exactly what happened? And it kind of was disruptive to my reading. This book is really popular right now. So I think a lot of people really appreciated that and loved it. And I don't blame them. And it's not that I dislike the book at all. It was just, that was so jarring that it was almost like I couldn't handle it when I was reading it.
Yeah, and I'm just thinking, you know, again, because we've been reading so much else, and I'm like, am I just become a snob when it comes to gothic literature? Like, I do not understand how this is the number one bestseller on Amazon under the gothic fiction category.
You know, the only thing I thought about it, because I was kind of curious as well, because the gothic Gothic themes can be popular, but Gothic fiction, Crimson Peak, I come back to that a lot. And I thought about Crimson Peak when I was reading this because there's kind of some similar weirdness. Crimson Peak didn't do very well because it was a Gothic movie, a Gothic romance, I mean, whatever, that was kind of advertised as a horror movie. And I wonder, like, if you were to put this in like a film version, which apparently they will be.
They are?
I think so. Let me look at my note here. I'm looking at my notes. Maybe that was another. Oh yeah, it's going to be a Hulu series. Then, you know, I'm thinking some people will watch this and expect like more of a sci-fi element. I feel like you're kind of going to satisfy nobody, you know, because I agree with you. This was the book that I read this year that made me go, am I just like a snob now that I just kind of didn't really know how to jive with this? I hope it's the gateway drug, ha ha ha, to other Gothic fiction for
gateway
people.
Gateway mushroom?
Yeah, the gateway mushroom. There we go.
Yeah, again, I'm okay with the sort of mix of sci-fi and horror and Gothic, as long as I felt like it was done either too much or too little in various categories. That if, like, go big or go home, like, just go all the way, fully exhaust that, you know, subgenre, and then, you know, be done with it.
Right.
Again, like, yeah. Honestly, if the mushrooms had been explained just a little better, I felt like I could have gotten behind it but again, it's still too, just trying to make it as mysterious as, like vampirism. Like, we don't know exactly how it works. But I'm thinking, and I maybe would have been okay with that sort of like mystical approach to the mushrooms if this was historical fiction that was taking place that she said in the 1800s in Mexico, not when it's the 1950s and we're talking about eugenics.
Right. Do you think it was like tried to combine too many things? I mean, there was kind of like the feminism, the eugenics, the mushrooms, the cannibalism. It's just kind of like, and this book's not super long comparatively. I'm looking at it now.
It's only 300 pages.
Yeah.
And most of the Gothic stuff we read is like 400.
Right. So, I mean, I guess that's another question I could ask myself. Am I just so used to things being like, you know, 400 pages and it explained very detailed that I just don't know what to think. I don't know. I'm also reading, you mentioned Jane Eyre, The Woman Upstairs right now. So I'm.
Oh yeah. I'm going to order that one.
Oh, cool. Okay, good. Cause as with this one, I'll be excited to know your thoughts.
Yeah. So one note I have is the aversion to psychology. So basically, you know, before we know about crazy mushrooms, Virgil is very against the idea of getting Catalina a psychiatrist. And so, you know, that made me think of, we understand, you know, with the spoilers, with the mushrooms, is that, you know, basically part of the mushrooms deal is that it gives you hallucinations. It's just as much a psychological weapon as it is a physical one, in my opinion, right?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
so, but before we know that, it just got me thinking about, again, you know, things, it's the 50s, you know, science is progressing and stuff. But of course, there's still this huge stigma around like mental health.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There is. And you made me think about kind of the counteracting drug to the mushrooms, which is what Naomi would go to town to get for Catalina in the
from the healer woman. Yeah.
Yeah. Which I'm always curious about that, the healer person, because I am not a practicing witch. I'm interested in witchcraft, but the healer and the, you know, kind of being perceived, a lot of healers were witches or perceived as witches and therefore persecuted for that. I don't know if you had any additional thoughts given your background.
Oh yeah, certainly. I am a practicing witch, but I am not an herbalist by any means. My stuff is more astrology stuff.
Okay.
But yeah, you're absolutely right. Like, just knowing a basic notion of herbs and what, you know, herbs could cure which symptoms could very quickly mark you as a witch. And again, it shows that old, you know, as much as we're bashing this book, it shows that element of the story, shows how here's a traditional medicine woman who is giving Catalina this concoction that can fight the evil within High Place.
Right. I just like when a medicine, you know, like a maybe sort of witch appears, because I feel like I'm kind of like a scattered studier of witchcraft. I have in the past particularly focused on European witch trials in Salem, but it just makes kind of warms my heart. I don't know. And I have an interest in herbs and things like that. So I always like to see the healer show up.
Although the only thing I would say is, yeah, I really liked the character of the medicine woman herself. The one thing I didn't like about her is how much the plot relied upon Naomi getting like the local gossip from her. Like, mm-hmm. to get one, like, should have just had one session and then slowly sprinkled the other sort of legends, like, throughout the story. I felt like that was cheating.
Okay, yeah.
I'm really bashing this book. I thought it was just going to bash the mushrooms, but...
I think it's really good to have this as a gateway to other Gothic stories. And I think if you pick this book up and you enjoyed it, for the... mushrooms, I mean, go for the sci-fi, for the castle and things like that, you know, pick up Jane Eyre if you haven't. I don't know how old people are and what their, you know, reading preferences are. It does make you think a lot, and it did actually really challenge me on, you know, the Gothic and what is considered, you know, am I too dedicated to my Gothic literature tropes and the fact that it's being messed with. Am I holding that too precious? I asked myself that question. And is this the direction that Gothic fiction is going? Is it going more in the, you know, elements of the sci-fi and horror?
Which makes sense, because we already did the huge discussion with Morgan Chalfont on the Frankenstein episode about how Gothic was the precursor to science fiction and speculative fiction.
So there we go. They kind of sometimes go hand in hand. This was just the surprising.
So we go in from Gothic to sort of sci-fi, and now we're going, so we're kind of getting a repetition of that, which again, I would have been okay with, but you just go big or go home. Like, just, you know, just a little bit of more sci-fi to explain it all, then everything would have been fine. I think for me with the mushrooms, just the dreams, like, and I'm trying to think about it, like, pseudo-scientifically, that, yeah, it makes sense she has dreams, because mushrooms, you know, you can get high on some of them, and they're hallucinogens and, you know, things like that. But the dreams were just too trippy.
Yeah, it was a little much. I don't know if this book has come with a trigger warning as well, and I kind of wondered if it might need it for parts of that. But related to the dreams, and then just Virgil, that whole scene, I think toward the end, was a lot. I don't know. I'm having a hard time describing all the thoughts, because I think the more I hear you talk about it, the more I realized it was so much packed into 300 pages. This could have easily expanded out to maybe Anne Radcliffe size. Like, if it was that kind of detail and, you know, storytelling, maybe we would be a little more forgiving. But, I kind of, now having this conversation, wish that there was just a little bit more commitment to one aspect rather than kind of very suddenly diverting and making me go, what the hell?
Yeah. And then I got confused, like, towards the end, like, we get to sort of like the catacombs or like the, you know, like mausoleum or whatever. And so basically the center of like the fungus is Agnes's corpse.
I had to reread that section because I was like, what? What? So I had to read it again because I wasn't sure.
So in a way, like, she was trying to make the mushrooms have a ghostly element, like the, like, what, because the mushrooms were like, they absorb the sort of psyches of everyone in the family who had died. And she has these conversations with Ruth, and then like Agnes is at the heart of it. And I'm just like, ugh.
It was a lot there at the end. And then, you know, sacrifice and things like that. I was really hoping it was going to connect more to elements of Mexican culture. And maybe it did, but I just didn't. I don't know.
I think definitely it's a commentary of colonialism is bad. Like, this is a very extreme form of, like, by literally transplanting the, you know, Gothic English manor house and, you know, basically putting them in Mexico where they used to run everything. And now they're basically a sort of, you know, shells of their former selves just clinging by a thread.
Right.
And then and they're so like butthurt and bitter about it because, again, they have this racist notion that we're so much better and yet our mine closed and like we barely have the means to, you know, maintain the house and like all that stuff. So like a lot of inferiority complex or like suppressed superiority complex.
Yes, I absolutely. Ugh. No electricity. That's one other thing I want to mention. No electricity. Why? I guess because of the mushrooms.
Oh, yeah, well, the mushrooms don't like light or fire.
Okay.
And that's why Florence was so picky about smoking.
Ah, okay. Glad you're here to put that together for me, because I was like, what was with that? Now I totally get it. Okay.
Oh, what, you know, get, you know, I was so mad on Naomi's behalf of when everyone blamed her when Catalina had the quote unquote seizure when she drank, you know, the medicine woman's tonic or whatever.
Yes, I was too.
I was so pissed off because basically to completely blame Naomi, it's basically to deny Catalina any agency that she asked me to get this for her.
Right.
And I was just so pissed off.
I was so distressed for Naomi because I feel like I can't even imagine. Like, you're there and you're tasked with this, making sure your cousin's okay. And then all of a sudden you're doing something to make it worse. I just, all my empathy-ness just came out going, oh my gosh, I feel so bad for you, Naomi. Yeah, that was a very jarring point.
It's like, oh, you think you're a doctor, you think, it's like, no, I wouldn't have volunteered this. She asked for it.
Right, right.
And in a way, by, you know, we don't know it's the mushrooms at that point, but in a way it's admitting that if we can't trust Catalina to be of sound enough mind not to drink something that would harm her, then that's proving we need a psychiatrist.
Exactly. Psychiatrist solves a lot of things. That is my thought.
Yeah, I feel so bad for Catalina because, you know, Catalina is the one in the story that likes Wuthering Heights and, like, all the gothic stuff. And she was, like, seduced by the sort of gothic splendor of High Place. And then Virgil's just, you know, a dick, as you said. And then I think, again, I went back and forth with him because I wasn't sure about him. And then he just, you know, when Naomi finds out about the mushrooms and everything, he's like, you know, did it kill, like, your first wife? And he just shrugs and is just like, the strong survive, the weak die. If we want to bring this back to coronavirus.
Right.
And certain people's sentiments that I do not agree with.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't. Oh, man. It's like I could take this 100 different directions and... It's
like,
just
if only really she had published this like a few years later, and then it could have been like a coronavirus in the mansion instead of mushrooms.
There we go. There we go. That would have been the, maybe that would have been, that's a little more, you know, Mask of the Red Death-y kind of, that would have.
Yeah. And then you just thought scientifically that you just, you know, drop the test tube and the virus spreads and then chaos.
Love it. Love it in the way that that would be a pretty cool take. So
maybe I need to write that one with
the
coronavirus gothic tale. I'm already thinking about, I want to do a parody of Coronavirus Carol.
Oh, that would be, man, that would be appropriate.
I would want to do an anti-masker, someone who doesn't believe, get visited by like the Black Death and see all the stuff that happened in the past, then by the coronavirus, and then get visited by some future disease and see what happens.
That, I think you have a very good take on that, and very timely. I would say, like, go ahead and write it and see what happens, I bet.
Yeah.
Oh, this old virus, it made me think of a book I haven't read, but it's on my shelf called Station 11, which I think is kind of about a virus. Which I'm like, why did I buy this book? I'm living it. Do I really want to read about it? I kind of do.
Yeah, like, I beginning of the pandemic, I binge watched this whole documentary series about the Black Plague.
Did you really?
I did.
I'm curious now. I watched a movie from India about how they handled the virus. It was very good. I don't remember the name of it. A friend of mine recommended, but I think your take on like a Mexican Gothic part two or like revised virus edition would be very interesting. I think a question that I want to ask is, why do you think, other than kind of the racism that the author set this in the 1950s. I mean, I love the aesthetic of kind of the 40s, 50s, and 60s. Very like feminine. I really like that. Kind of the clean, polished look. I just finished watching The Queen's Gambit, and that's just kind of my jam. I love that aesthetic. But beyond that, her love for, you know, cool bombshell looking women. Why do you think she said it in the 1950s?
Well, in a way, it's kind of like the book that I really, really liked called The Little Stranger by Sarah Williams. It takes place in England. It's much more traditional Gothic, but it's also, again, in the 1950s. And a big notion of it is, you know, there's no, like, it's in England, so there isn't the colonial context, but just the idea that through two world wars, like the whole social fabric of the British aristocracy and European aristocracy is completely disintegrated and all the implications of that. So I think beyond racism, I think just doing it in the 50s, like showing the, you know, this decline, a realistic decline of this expat British family who had a silver mine and now it's closed and like all those things. I think just trying to give, I think it's set in the 50s to give a sense of realism to like the family's like social standing in a way to like sort of balance all the super trippy mushrooms.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I like your thoughts on that. It just is in thinking about settings, you know, to read that. And I guess there would be times it might not be appropriate or, you know, historically accurate to bring a Gothic novel in Mexico. I guess it works. The one thing I did want to mention about her bringing the high place, to like transporting that to Mexico. That's just so fascinating. It makes me think of a local story about kind of a similar house being transported. I think it was from Austria into the Midwest. And I guess I didn't really realize that was something that people would do, but
yeah, that's colonialism. They're literally, you know, trying to create, you know, the place of their homeland and screw all the other indigenous peoples and cultures and whatever.
And we're still doing it. So it's still a thing. Oh gosh, yeah.
So for as much as I hated Florence, I really liked her son Francis because I feel like he portrayed like a good conflicted character of like he's been under the thumb of this family for so long, and so the way it takes so long for him to rebel against the family kind of makes sense. So I really liked his character again for the for this crazy situation that he was reacting to with his great uncle being the mushroom patriarch. I liked how he handled things.
I like that character as well. Naomi and Francis were I like both of those characters.
Yes, they were.
And their relationship, their relationship was nice. It wasn't this like brooding, you know, Gothic hero. He just seemed like, honestly, he seemed like somebody that I could have been friends with. So I was like, yeah, it's nice to see somebody like that show up in a book. Yeah.
And then we can, talking about toxic mushrooms, but what about toxic masculinity? Because there comes a few points where Virgil is goading Francis and is basically like, oh, you finally grown a pair of balls and like, you know, things like that. But just because he's been more academic and stuff like that.
Right.
And is not stereotypically handsome in the way that Virgil is.
Yeah, we definitely have two different kind of males there. And as far as what you said, Virgil, kind of the definition of a masculine in some ways, and then Francis kind of less so, as if we're talking about stereotypical roles.
Stereotypical alpha beta.
Yes, exactly. And
which is kind of interesting that she went that route, because Naomi is so nuanced in combining, right, you know, certain things. And then we have the externally with the men, it's Virgil and Francis embodying very distinct things.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, like I think I mentioned earlier, I really thought that it kind of added to the interest in kind of subverting that toxic masculinity was Francis's like weird quirk of this interest in mushrooms, which turned out to be, you know, kind of more of a survival mechanism, I guess. But I liked that character as well. There were a couple, I mean, Naomi and Francis were great characters who I liked and didn't see, I did not read them as like cardboard cutouts, which I feel like sometimes when we read these stories, that's what I see. They're just nothing. Mm-hmm. And these two were substantive.
Mm-hmm. Alrighty then. So again, the mansion burns down. Very gothic.
Yes. Yes. I thought of you. That was, I mean, I thought of you a lot because we knew we were going to talk about this book. But one of the things that I remember you talking to me about was your book group talking about, does the mansion burn down? And I was like, oh, good. It burned down in this one. So it made me think of you and that conversation.
Yeah. And then there's the question, like, does the fungus, like, survive? Or, like, can it survive because Francis survived? And, again, I don't know how the human biology works with this fungi. Like, is Francis going to get mushrooms growing out of his back like Howard? Ugh.
Yeah, that was, it's all very gross.
Oh, my God, Howard the Patriarch was so gross. Like, we've kind of veered away from talking about just how gross Howard was, like, in his connection with the mushrooms, but.
Yeah. He was not a fan of him at all. He was the father of
And, of course,
the
gothic trope of incest.
Yeah, cool. Glad we hit that one.
She got that classical part right.
Right. Oh, man. I just remember that fine, kind of like the scene before they get to the mushrooms and kind of all the chaos, because I forget exactly what's happening, but Howard is he like shedding his skin or something? Like something really...
I kind of breezed over that because I didn't want to read it.
Okay. I remember it being very... gross.
He has like these pustules and like it clearly just like not even just like bubonic plague, like you can tell there's seriously some crazy trippy things going on.
Okay Yeah, we don't have to talk about that. We don't have to relive that.
Okay, on that note, shall we move to the gothometer?
Yes, let's do it.
Okay, atmosphere and setting, what do you think?
So let's just, I just want to note that I rated this right after I read it, just so I would kind of give more of an authentic, or for me, my thoughts in the moment. Mm-hmm. And I gave it an 8 out of 10, which probably post our conversation I may not have. But I did think it was interesting in kind of bringing that the English Gothic to Mexico, and kind of some of the liberties it did allow. Just, you know, kind of very... I kind of wish it would have been more in depth, but I gave it an 8. And how about you?
Again, I gave it a 6 because, again, the fact that she was clinging so hard to the British Gothic setting, despite the fact that we're in a totally different environment of Mexico, I kind of counted that against it in a way because, again, partly because of the whole misleading name thing, Mexican Gothic.
Right.
But I wonder if the whole super traditional British manor house, was that planted there basically to be the super traditional part to quote unquote balance the crazy mushrooms?
Maybe.
Possibly. And yeah, that's just one thing I think about. Like, it's so traditional in some way and then just completely veers off in a different direction. I'm not sure how I feel about that. So... for the setting, I think I would have preferred something more authentically Mexican. Like, still, like, you can still be dark and gloomy and decaying and, like, you know, seeing, like, certain elements of not just, like, colonial, like, the white British side, but also, like, others, like, other higher-ups of Mexican people or, you know, who were half white or whatever, seeing them sort of decline in the revolution. She could have gone that route as well, so... yeah, 6.
Yes. That was a good, I think you had great justification.
Okay. The past, what do you think?
Well, again, I gave it an 8, and I think I'm going to rate this novel pretty high as far as gothicness goes, which will be interesting post-discussion. But the legacy of the Doyles, the mushrooms, the room at the end were all rooted in the past. So that was kind of my reason for the 8 there. How about you?
Yeah, I also gave it an 8. Yeah, because the past of, again, the whole, like, colonial decline, being reflected at a very micro personal level in this one family and their silver mine. You know, that's used a lot. But so, yeah, just general past, and then the family's past, and then again, the epidemic that killed all the workers, that comes back. You know, the story of Ruth, who shot everybody because she was trying to, you know, get rid of Howard. And so that ends up being relevant. So, yeah, all those things, I gave it 8.
Good. I'm glad we were on the same page there.
Okay. The supernatural.
I guess this was my favorite number the day because I gave it an 8. And I think just because of the uniqueness of the mold and things being supernatural, never would have thought about mushrooms and being supernatural. But I'm guessing I could argue that that had a supernatural element, moreover, like, you know, I don't know, moreover sci-fi. But when I think about it post-discussion, it falls more into the category of sci-fi. But throughout the novel, feels like a ghost. And then it's mushrooms. Surprise. How about you?
I gave it a 5 because, again, for it being mushrooms, I felt like she was trying to force a supernatural quality onto the mushrooms, like with the gloom. And I was even okay with the gloom, like, you know, containing the consciousness of Ruth and everyone else who had died so that they're kind of ghosts. But still, it's a mushroom. It's a tangible thing. That, again, I should have been described in the sci-fi way. So, yeah, I give it a 5.
Justified 5.
Okay. Heroes, heroines, and villains.
I give this one a 9 for the heroes. And I am really going to give credit to Naomi for that because she was a fun character. I liked her. Again, we really talked about how she was kind of refreshing. She was feminine. And then she had kind of other interests beyond going to parties, but she liked going to parties. And I appreciated that nuance for Naomi, that she wasn't just concerned with, you know, her standing in society or, you know, this particular man. She had very vast interest and she stood up for herself, which I appreciated. We talked a little bit about Francis. I liked his character as well. And Virgil and Henry and Florence were easy to hate. So I'm giving it a 9. How about you?
Yeah, I'm giving it a 9 because I felt everyone, with the exception of Florence, the characterization of these characters was brilliant and great. And again, all my issues with this book are purely plot-based. But for the characters responding to the really crazy, trippy situation that they're in, I really liked them. Again, with the exception of Florence, because I felt Florence, her motivation for being so rigid and so loyal to Howard didn't, you know, should have been further expanded upon. But yeah, for all those reasons, I give it a 9.
Cool. We have one that we agree. Oh, we have 2 we agreed on. Okay. Mm-hmm.
And then finally, mystery. What did you think?
I feel like we're going to differ a lot here, or maybe not. I don't know how to rate this on mystery because of the mushrooms. I don't know. I mean, I felt like it was such like a left turn that I was like the mystery wasn't even built because it was just destroyed in the moment that I figured, you know, that was revealed. It's like, well, what? So I'm going to give it a 5. That's my lowest rating in this, the Gothameter as on the categories. But what about you?
I give it an 8 because I felt like the mystery did follow a very traditional like flow for, you know, why is Catalina being so subdued and whatever, and just Naomi going through her whole investigative process by herself, and then also trying to enlist the help of the local doctor and just basically trying to glean whatever information she can from people like Virgil and Florence. So all of it, very traditional detective novel, then up to the point of the mushrooms. So for mystery, and then just high enough in the mystery of being a super weird plot twist. Like, not necessarily that it was a twist I liked, but the fact that I never saw it coming. That in itself objectively makes my rating go high at 8.
Well, all things considered, I think we're just in different categories. I have that you rated it 36 and I rated it 38. So I guess we kind of felt the same-ish about it.
We felt the same-ish, but on different categories.
Right, Right. It
And
was.
again, because this is so weird and so traditional and yet such a subversion that it's hard to like again rate it because you
Right.
don't know whether to count certain things, certain traditional or certain innovative things for or against it, because again, I didn't feel like all of them were executed that well.
Yeah, I guess if we had like a very stringent like boxes to tick, I'm not sure it would have been rated this high.
But yeah, and I don't think I've ripped up a book as much as this book, as this one on this podcast.
I'm trying to think of one that I kind of went. I don't know. I know some of the other books that were. I don't know. You know what? I'm never forgiving for a lot of the male characters, so I think this was the difference for me here. Is I actually kind of did appreciate the Francis character, and I don't know. I'm glad we read it, even if we tore it apart. It was. It's good to kind of know what is popular in the genre right now. I feel like some more of the contemporary ones will be interesting to discuss.
Yep, and it's okay that we rip this up because neither the author nor her agent ever responded to me. At least Riley Sager's agent, politely declined.
Well, that's good. Do you know, and I didn't read a lot of ratings for this because I didn't want it to sway me too much. Other than that, it's being widely read. I don't really know how it's been rated. Like, do people like it? I don't know.
Like, I'm looking up Amazon right now because I'm curious.
Me too. I'm gonna look at Goodreads. Well, the rating on Goodreads is out of, is it 5? Out of 5, it gets a 3.75, and it's been rated by 74,139.
On Amazon, it's at 4 stars with 7,322 reviews.
Interesting.
So definitely some people are probably doing the same thing we are in, knocking it down a star for that, for some of those things we talked about. But yeah, still very popular and again, number one on Gothic fiction.
The gateway drug. That's what I'll call it. Now go read Jane Eyre or Wuthering Heights.
Indeed. So, I've got my Mexican Gothic book here. Shall I do a random rereading?
Sure.
Why would it do that to me? It wouldn't be intentional. I guess it's in its nature. Every damn vision she had experienced had been terrifying. Whatever this thing's nature was, she couldn't begin to understand it. A nightmare, that's what it was. A living nightmare. Sins and malevolent secrets fastened together.
I guess she was dreaming about the mushrooms, right? That's kind of what that
Yeah, this
was.
is, yeah, again, this is just the description of like, does the mushroom, do the mushrooms have a consciousness or a motivation or everything? And yeah, she just doesn't understand it at all. And again, we don't understand it either. And this was the
No.
point where Francis was supposed to kind of sort of explain things to her in a scientific way and just never happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, I sometimes wonder even if. Maybe I would have been more forgiving with the whole mushroom thing if specifically Francis was not had his little hobby of studying mushrooms.
Yeah,
Like in a way that sets it up in a more scientific way of, something you can study, whereas if Francis didn't have that interest and we and like just no one has an interest in fungi and we just don't know how this works, then maybe it would have worked a little more. But the fact that Francis specifically studies them and he can't explain this any better.
Right. I think you make an excellent point. Like, for me, initially thinking it was just like a quirky interest, I think if that would have been it, I would have enjoyed that. Or if it would have just been did not care, that would have been a good direction as well.
Yeah.
But you said something that made me laugh. Interest in fungi or something. So thank you for the laugh.
Yeah, and then here it's like the last next few sentences. Then I was right about your house being haunted, and my cousin is not insane. She's simply seen this gloom. Francis nodded, and Naomi chuckled. No wonder Francis had been so agitated when she had suggested that there was a rational explanation to Catalina's strange behavior and her talk of ghosts. Not that she would have guessed it was all connected to mushrooms. Neither would we, Naomi. Neither would we.
Neither would we.
And this concludes our riveting conversation of Mexican Gothic. Again, probably Jess is being more forgiving than I am. You can check it out for Gateway Drug, but I would highly recommend, if you're looking for recent releases of Gothic literature, Home Before Dark by Ryle Sager. he does some really nice things.
I think, and then another book, Horrid, for YA, kind of the same tone, and very dark. That was a recommendation from Amy. I have yet to read Home Before Dark.
I had to be mindful of my budget because it was one of those like hardcovers that was like $25, but I finally got it in my library and it's really, really good.
For some reason I wanted to, the woman upstairs was pulling me. So we'll see when Riley pulls me.
Tune in next time as we discuss my ultimate favorite in modern Gothic literature, The Shadow of the Wind by Carlos Ruiz Zafón. And we will be joined again by Morgan Chalfont. And again, this is my top ultimate favorite in modern Gothic, like, and by extension, this book and its series, The Cemetery of Forgotten Books. And I'm so bitter that the author, Ruiz Zafón, he passed away in June of this year, and it sucks.
Yeah, I'm excited to read this. I know that you love it. And, you know, a couple other people I've talked to, this is a book that the reaction isn't like, oh yeah, I like that book. This is the, oh my God, it's very near and dear.
This, in essence, this is the Harry Potter series of my 20s.
Okay.
How much I love this series.
I'm excited to read it. It's a big one, which is great. I don't know. It sounds very fascinating. I have not read it. I think lessons learned from reading Mexican Gothic in July and trying to talk about it now, I'm glad I waited. So I'll be excited to read it. And, discuss with somebody who's so passionate about it.
So yeah, stick around for Shadow of the Wind with Morgan Chalfont. Catch you guys later. Bye.